Hello once again, Miner fans. Welcome back, and thanks so much for listening to this edition of the Picks Up Podcast, exploring the sports stories, issues, and personalities associated with UTEP athletics. Here's hoping that you and your family remain healthy, enjoying one another, and continue to be productive. And once again, thanks to all of our healthcare professionals, first responders, and the many others on the front line whose efforts are so significant and greatly appreciated, especially in these most unusual times. UTEP men's basketball had just concluded its season in the Conference USA basketball tournament 2 months ago now, believe it or not, when leagues across the nation abruptly shut play down in the face of the COVID-19 pandemic, quickly sending student athletes, coaches, fans, and staff back to their homes. Although the season as a whole has and will not be completed and a champion will not be crowned, the business of college basketball continues to march on in a much different manner. Working within the parameters of the new normal, UTEP head men's basketball coach Rodney Terry joins me for this week's chapter of the Picks Up Podcast. And Rodney, this is the first opportunity that you and I have had to visit since the tournament. Thank you for setting aside the time. How well are you and your family getting through this?
We're doing good right now, John. Thanks for asking. And, first off, my thoughts and prayers go out to all of those who've been affected by COVID-19 and this pandemic that we're all embarking on right now. And, it's really uncertain times, as you alluded to earlier. And, we're just trying to follow all the guidelines and things you have to do to try to stay safe this time of year right now.
Obviously, either one of us, we both got some facial hair stuff going on. I haven't grown a mustache in probably 15 years. How long has it been since you've had facial hair?
Well, John, no, I have not. I've never grown out a full beard until now. And, I haven't shaved. Man, I really probably haven't shaved since we got back from the tournament, to be honest. And I haven't had a haircut in about 2 months. So it's a different look right now. I'm growing some hair I didn't even think I could grow right now, you know?
Might you carry that into the start of next season?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I want to scare anybody with that now. I think I'll just kind of, lend it for the corona look right now, for the time being.
Obviously staying home has given us all plenty of time to do some different things and watch different things, such as The Last Dance, the ESPN documentary series that chronicles Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. I assume you've been watching, and if you have, what's been your critique?
Well, I think it's been really good. I think, again, we got a chance to live through those times and watch, Michael play throughout his career. And I had a chance of, I was working in Wilmington at the time, and I got a chance to watch him work out when he came back with the Wizards and did that. So I watched him do a workout, a practice one time with the team and an individual practice. So I got a chance to work, see him work firsthand. But I think it's a unique documentary because I think it's from his perspective. And obviously he has all the control over the way it's being done. And I think it's been really good. I think it's opened the eyes to a whole different generation that didn't get a chance to see him play and see him do the things that we got a chance to see him do. And, I've got a chance to kind of critique it after each of the episodes with one of my best friends, Lance Blanks, who played on the Bad Boys teams there. And just kind of relive that a little bit in terms of, when those guys walked off at the end as well. He said he had a chance to just kind of walk by Mike, too, and Mike never really forgot that stuff because he and Mike had a good relationship as well.
Well, one thing's for sure, there'll never be another quite like Michael Jordan, will there?
No, he was that guy was a special talent, And from a basketball standpoint, you talk about a guy who had unbelievable athleticism and then his drive and desire to want to win at another level. And then all the physical tools that he brought to the table and his skill set was just off the charts.
So I mentioned the sudden end of the college basketball season. Normally, you and your staff would conduct your exit interviews and proceed into the off-season protocol, but you really didn't get that chance this time around, did you?
Well, to be honest with you, we probably would have been over at a national tournament somewhere, junior college national tournament. Everybody usually goes to that when their season concludes a little bit and things of that nature there. And we probably would have got a chance to get right out on the road recruiting and getting after seeing some guys that we were targeting. But, you know, under the circumstances, we weren't able to do that. And, you know, as well as everybody else in college basketball, we haven't been able to get out on the road and recruit. And we've had to kind of do a lot of the things a little differently. And quite honestly, we kind of had to go back the way we did it, you know, in the old days a little bit. We had to do a ton of phone work, and you've had to kind of be creative with whether it was Zoom or you were doing, you know, Microsoft Teams or whatever you were doing in terms of being able to communicate and have some presentations with kids and their families.
I bet you've come up with something you'd have to do, I would imagine.
My staff, you know, I've got a really good staff. You know, my guys, again, they've adapted and adjusted to what we've had to do in terms of video, in terms of, you know, getting the technology, you know, up to speed in terms of what we have to do to reach parents or our players or whatever we have to do. They've done a great job with that, you know. And I think the thing that we'll see a difference in between last year or the previous year and this year is that we're going to have good continuity with our staff.
Right. And staff, you've now completed a full year with Kenton Paulino, Nick Mattson, and Arturo Armand. How would you assess their strengths and how effectively they've been able to work together?
Well, again, you know, you can't put a price tag on in terms of your staff. You're going to only be as good as the people you have around you, and you have to trust the people that you have around you. And to me, in my book, loyalty always is the number one deal. If you're an assistant in terms of working for a head coach, I was a very loyal assistant coach to my head coach, and I've got a lot of familiarity with my staff. I mean, we've got years together. I mean, we've got 30 years. Coach Paulino, like Ken, I've got 17 years with him, Nick, 10 years. So, you know, we've got continuity and we got guys that have each other's back, you know. And I'm not saying that we didn't have that on the previous staff. You know, Lamont did a great job of that. I can't say about the other staff member I had in terms of the loyalty piece. But that's big in terms of continuity. And it's also big with your players and your team, you know. And loyalty goes a long ways, you know. And, you know, in terms of you know, not only working for someone, but also carrying out your duties to the fullest. But when you talk about strengths, you know, Ken does a great job with our offense. He's always had a really good feel in working with me. I think the 5 years he worked with me at Fresno State, we were always, you know, one of the top teams in field goal percentage, you know, offense, and we're always, you know, a team that could score the ball and get things done. And you know, he just has a really good feel in that domain. He also has great rapport with our guys as well. Nick did a really good job this past year, I think, working with our defense and really kind of, you know, picking up a little bit where Lamont left off. Lamont did a great job for us defensively. I thought Nick did a really good job defensively from game to game. The prep work that we did in games, you know, four games, I thought we did a really good job. And you know, then Art just kind of ties it all in together a little bit. He works a little bit with offense and defense and does a lot of the personnel when we talk about opponents and guys that we're preparing for.
When the tournament ended, everyone scattered quick. How fast, how well were you and the staff, do you believe, able to get the student-athletes focused on their new normal, which is at home and completing their studies, at least for the semester, online?
Well, most of the time around the country, as you embark on your conference tournaments, there a lot of guys are going probably into the next week into spring break, you know, most of the time. And, you know, oftentimes as college coaches, we always say, hey, we want to be playing during spring break as opposed to taking spring break. And, you know, but we had spring break right following our conference tournament. So from that point, our guys were released to go home and try to unwind and get caught up. We had a few guys that stayed behind and didn't go home and weren't planning on going home prior to all the things that were transpiring. But from that point, you know, after spring break, we really tried to get the guys back in focus in terms of their academics. We had to put together our plan along with our academic support program that does an excellent job, by the way. We're really blessed to have a great academic support program with Heather and what they do for us over there, you know, but put together a game plan in terms of how we were going to be able to stay in communication with our guys as we made a transition to online classes and not face-to-face classes, along with the study hall and tutoring stuff that we had to do. They did an excellent job in terms of really working with our student athletes and getting those guys back on task again, whether it was with study hall, tutors, and all that. Our guys did a pretty good job trying to close out the semester.
How often have you been in contact with the guys? And when you have been, what have you been able to accomplish?
Well, you know what often happens a lot of times, John, and again, this will be my 25th year at Division One. A lot of times, it'll be my 10th year next year as a head coach. A lot of times, those guys have heard your voice all year long. They kind of need a little bit of break from your voice. You know what I mean? And I've always been one, even when I worked for Rick Barnes and I worked for Jerry Wainwright, the different guys, Harry Miller that I worked with, those guys often said the same thing, you know, and stuff. Now it's the time, more time, that assistant coaches get a chance to have their voice front and center a little bit more, whether we're in workouts or whether we're in whatever that we're doing. It gives them a chance to continue to grow and stuff. Not that I won't interject and be involved as well, because you always are, but you give them a chance to grow a little bit as well. But we were able to, later on, after we got guys in a routine of what they were doing, we were able to start trying to make contact, all myself and talking with guys. And then as the guys got through their academic, you know, we're getting close to being done, we started doing our exit meetings with guys and talking about some of the things they did well this year, some of the things they need to continue to improve on, both on and off the court.
Obviously, no on-court workouts taking place. Same for everybody around the country. How do you believe that's going to impact play once we do get started next season?
I mean, you know, again, I think you make a lot of strides a lot of times. Sometimes in the spring, you probably make more strides in the summer than you do in the spring a little bit from time to time. You know, I think really, you know, I think student athletes, I think, you know, you have to be very careful in terms of not overworking guys. You know what I mean? I think there comes a time when those guys' bodies are tired, their minds are tired. I think it's been a really good time for us, you know, and everything's happened for a reason, to be honest with you, John. You know, God, again, has the master plan, and, you know, shut the whole country down, shut the whole world down, you know. So, you know, I said to our guys, don't get so caught up right now and having to try to pick up a basketball or try to go out and try to stay in shape right now. Right now, what you need to really focus on right now is, one, staying healthy and then keeping other people around you healthy, because, you know, the basketball carries a lot of germs on it, you know, things of that nature. If you're out there trying to do things and moving around, just sit still right now and really try to, you know, get yourself back mentally strong where you're not fatigued mentally. Concentrate on your academics and do as well as you can do academically right now.
You know, I think UTEP has always believed that if we can get kids and their families into El Paso, that there was always a good chance of getting them to commit to the minors. How challenging has that been, the inability to be able to bring a kid onto campus and trying to get kids to commit to this UTEP program?
Well, again, it's one of our major strengths. When you talk about strengths of our program, I think it's, you know, obviously in recruiting, being able to get someone to campus and to get them in our community. Because, again, their perception is totally different in terms of what they think as opposed to actually when they get here and they meet people in the community and interact with all the nice people that we have in our community. And then they get a chance to see, you know, our situation firsthand, you know, because if you're from a distance, you don't really have the appreciation that you probably should have about our program. So it's made it more challenging. But again, I think our staff's done a really good job adapting and adjusting to that. And knowing that strength was taken away, you know, we couldn't use that as a crush test to us not continue to be able to sign guys and also get guys interested and really want to make our situation a situation that they wanted to try to be a part of.
You mentioned all the time that you've spent now at the D1 level. You've been coaching for 30 years. Let's go back a little bit in time. You grew up in Texas, born in Angleton. What are your earliest memories of your involvement with this great game of basketball?
Wow, that's a great point. I got a chance to do a TABC clinic, Texas High School Basketball Coaches Clinic today. And, you know, it was always one of my bucket list of things I wanted to do, you know, in terms of being a speaker. I got a chance to do it a couple of years ago and I kind of checked it off the list. And, you know, as we had to go through this right now, they still want to do the clinic, but we had to do it through Zoom and still being able to share ideas, because in coaching, you're always sharing ideas, you know, and when you think you know it all, it's really time for you to retire. So, you know, we're always sharing ideas. We're always looking at what other people are doing and seeing and if you can make it you know, mold into what you're doing and how you do things. You know, every year you always take an assessment of as a coach on how you felt like you did. You grade yourself, and then how can you improve on what you did the previous year, whether it was through disappointments or maybe not meeting the expectations that you had for your program and things of that nature. And you try to build on those, and you try to get better with those. But I guess to answer your question, man, I started playing a game of basketball when I was 8 years old, and I really haven't looked back, you know, haven't looked back since. And to be honest with you, I haven't done a lot. I haven't lost a lot, you know what I mean, as a player and as a coach, you know what I mean? I've been on successful winning teams and been a part of winning teams for a better part of my life. And so I really understand what it takes to win, how you have to win, and again, you know, every year you're trying to improve what you're doing and enhance what you're doing. You know, I remember last summer, I spent some time with an assistant from the LA Clippers, and we talked a lot about offensive packages and things that Doc Rivers did, and a lot of things those guys run offensively and the spacing and things of that nature there. And, you know, you'll be surprised if you're really a true basketball buff. You know, in college, there are a lot of guys that run a lot of pro actions. I mean, now the pros make it look a lot different because of the personnel that they have doing it. They're a little bit more efficient at what they do, but you run a lot of the same stuff and you do a lot of the same things that guys at the next level do.
Did you play any other sports? All growing up?
No, yeah, absolutely. When I was growing up, I grew up in a town of about 20,000 people, and everybody knows everybody. And, you know, our high school was a 5A, which was the largest size that you could have at that time. It's now 6A now, you know, but we were 5A, but we were a small 5A. I mean, we were, you know, 1,800 students in school, and we're playing against schools that have 3,000 students, you know, and so. In a school, you know, my size, everybody played every sport. You know, I played when it was basketball season, I played basketball. When it was football season, I played football. When it was baseball season, I played baseball. But you never had an off season. You played every sport, you know. But I grew up doing that, you know, my whole life. I grew up playing a ton of baseball, grew up playing a ton of basketball, grew up playing, you know, football. My mom wanted to play when I was little, but my mom wouldn't let me play until I got to school and everything. But you played all the way through high school, you know, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. I mean, I wouldn't trade having had a chance to play some football, and I thought it made me tougher mentally, physically, and I was actually pretty good at football, to be honest, you know, and I wasn't bad in baseball. I was pretty good in baseball.
Quick infielder?
You know what? I played a lot of middle infield early on in baseball. I really threw my arm. I did a lot of pitching when I was younger, a lot of pitching, and kind of just ragged my arm out a little bit from pitching so much and everything. But I ended up settling in middle infield, short, second, wide out in football.
You chose St. Edward's University in Austin. What about St. Edward's attracted you?
During that time, you know, I was still trying to make a decision if I wanted to play football. I had some really good football offers. You know, I think at that time we were the old Southwest Conference, so I had some offers in football, Southwest Conference schools that had some interest, but I just didn't have, my heart wasn't in playing football. And so basketball, you know, there were schools that had recruited me throughout the year. During that time, we had the old J. Parker Summer League is what we had, BCI basketball, that now they have AAU basketball. But, you know, I got a chance to entertain some people from a basketball standpoint. I actually committed to Texas A&M, which is now Texas A&M Kingsville and everything. And then I ended up having to renege on that. And I ended up making my way down to Austin. And I loved Austin. I mean, you know, you get to that city, it's really hard not to love Austin. And had a coach there that had real good interest in myself, and ended up being a great experience for me being at St. Edward's. You know, I got a private school education, paid for through a basketball scholarship, and played on some good teams, made some lifelong friends, and had some really, really, really good professors at St. Edward's. A really good academic school as well.
Your undergrad at St. Edward's. Although you began your coaching career immediately out of college, did you have any thoughts at all of doing anything besides coaching?
I grew up in a family where my stepdad was a high school coach, and he's coached for over 30 plus years. But I really wasn't sure if that's something I wanted to do. I got my undergrad in business administration, and I interviewed, actually, I think I want to say I was going to my third interview for UPS. I wanted to get into the management training in the management program there. But they said you had to drive for 6 months. And so I wasn't excited about the whole driving piece for 6 months. And so I took a team in the summer and worked with these kids that was an AAU team, and just kind of wanted to see if that was something I wanted to do. And boy, I had the best time with those guys that summer. From that point on, I was like, man, I think I want to coach. I got a chance to do that at the high school level for 5 years, and great experience.
But actually, your first opportunity was right at St. Edward's, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I did that too as well. That next year I stayed on as a grad assistant there and helped our next year's team with conditioning and basketball and things of that nature there. So I got a chance to do that. I got a chance to do the high school level and a little bit of college, and just kind of decided that's really what I wanted to do.
Yeah, a couple of years back in Austin, Bowie High School, and then you get your first head coaching opportunity at Somerville and your old school, Angleton. What did your first two high school head coaching opportunities, what did they teach you?
I was lucky when I got out of college, I got a high school job coaching high school basketball, but I was working at the junior high, but I coached at the high school as an assistant coach with the head coach, Celestia Carrier, who's still a great mentor to this day for me. But Celestia had been the head coach at Southwest Texas, which is now Texas State. So he had been a Division I head coach, and he was really a really good coach and had a wealth of basketball and ball experience. For those 2 years as an assistant, he often said to me, he's like, Rodney, you got to come in here thinking like a head coach every day, because you're going to get an opportunity sooner than you think. And sure enough, after 2 years, I had a job offered to me at Somerville High School. Class 2A school, you're talking about a school that had one stoplight right outside of College Station. But it was a basketball school, you know what I mean? Meaning that everything around that town focused on basketball, and they had had a lot of success there, and they had a really good coach the previous year. And I think it got those guys to the regional final. Here comes a new young guy in to be the head coach there. I got a lot of early on, but Coach Harris doesn't do it this way. Or he didn't do it that way. And Coach Harris was a really good coach. I said, well, guys, we're going to do a little bit different. Coach Terry does it a little bit different and everything, but give it a chance, And that first year, I had a chance to go to the state tournament. We ended up going past the regional final and getting to the state tournament and had a really, really good team. The next year we went back to the regional final again. So we had a lot of success in those first 2 years. But I'll tell you what I remember from that experience. Little small town, you watch Hoosiers, and how Hoosiers packed up the whole town when you were going on your playoff runs. And then when you went to the state tournament, the whole town literally shut down. Everybody shut down. And they went down to Austin with us to the Drum and watched us play in our state tournament game. And here we are, a Class 2A school, and we got to put playing in front of about 13,000 people. And just an experience. My guys, I know right now that are almost 40 years old, guys still talk about that experience and everything that they had. But I had a chance to leave there and go to Angleton, back to my high school, where I got a chance to work with the same people that had been my teachers. Superintendent was one of my ninth grade teacher as well. So I got a chance to go back home, and what an experience that was. I was coaching guys their teammates of mine. They were now there. Their cousins and, a lot of relatives that I was coaching and working with. I tried to get one guy to stay out. He didn't stay out very long. Quentin Jammer ended up being a really good player at the University of Texas and played in the NFL. And I was like, man, Quentin would be a pretty good point guard for me, good defender for me, And Quentin came out for about 2 weeks and he shut it down on me and said, Coach, I think I'm going to go back over here to football and do my football deal. But no, it was a neat experience to go back home and get a chance to take my high school coach's place. He was 18 years there and was a great high school coach. And, man, I, you know, again, I had aspirations to want to coach in college, but I was very happy where I was. I mean, we were going to be really good the next year and left a really good team. They ended up making the playoffs, and they got a really good coach to come in behind me, and Kelly Green, who later went on to become a college coach as well. And everything. So I don't know. I've been blessed. I've been lucky to be in some great situations.
You get the chance from there to get into the collegiate ranks, D1. And you've worked for some really good people, Harry Miller at Baylor, Jerry Wainwright, who was your assistant at Fresno State. You worked for him at North Carolina Wilmington. And of course, 9 years for Rick Barnes at Texas. What did you take individually from those three guys?
Oh, well, great question. You know, Harry Miller, man, I tell you, he gave me my first opportunity in college coaching at Baylor University. And not only did he give me a great opportunity, but I wore about 9-10 hats on that staff. I got a chance to do just about everything that you can do in college basketball in terms of responsibilities. Billy Gillespie was our top assistant on that staff as well. So I got a chance to learn a lot from Billy and working under him as the third assistant. But Harry, tremendous man of integrity. I mean, really good coach, had a lot of success at the high school ranks, got into college coaching, but his integrity was unmatched and good to the earth man in terms of the type of person that Coach Miller was, you know, and he ran his program that way. And boy, I got a chance to learn a lot, and he gave me a lot of responsibility. I have so much to be thankful for in terms of my opportunity in college coaching because of Harry Miller. But you talk about one of the best men to walk on this earth. I mean, that's Harry Miller. You know, you talk about a class act. So I learned a lot about how you do things, how you treat people in college coaching, you know, from him. I had a chance to move on to Jerry Wainwright. Again, another guy who's very well respected in this profession and had a lot of success at a lot of different universities and was also a really good high school coach as well. But again, man, coach was hard-nosed. Defensive-minded, you know, and just really was tough with the guys. And then you talk about Rick Barnes. Rick Barnes is a major relationship guy, communication guy, and really big on loyalty, you know, and having loyalty around him.
9 years at Texas before you get your first head coaching opportunity. How many head coaching vacancies would you say that you inquired about or maybe were involved with during your 9 years at Texas?
Oh, man, too many to kind of think of right now, to be honest. There were two opportunities that I didn't take that were offered to me. UNC Wilmington, where I coached with Coach Wainwright, was offered to me, and I decided not to do that. UTEP was also offered to me as well while I was there, and I chose not to do it at that particular time because I wanted to stay where I was, and numerous other jobs. I guess you know. I actually was in the finals. To be honest, some people probably don't know this, but Marvin Menzies and myself were the final two guys with New Mexico State at one point, you know, and stuff. But you name it: Tulsa, UCF, where else? Missouri State. I mean, just go right down the line. There were quite a few that I was involved with. And University of Houston, I was really crushed that I didn't get the Houston job. I thought I was right there. I was in the top two to get that job and didn't get that job at the time. But you know what? God has a plan, and he put me where I was supposed to be. I got an opportunity out at Fresno State and was excited about that opportunity and got a chance to try to take a program from ground zero and build it all the way up again. And it wasn't easy. It was really hard. You know, the first 2 years were really hard, and when you're building a program, it's really, really hard. It's never easy, you know?
How challenging was it being a head coach at the collegiate level for the first time, and how much did you draw on your time as a head coach in the high school?
Boy, it had been a long time, John. It had been 15 years. I was an assistant, you know, Division I assistant coach for 15 years. And, again, I wouldn't trade any of those experiences in terms of staying there and learning as much as I could. Whether it be with Rick or Jerry or Harry, I got a chance to learn a lot from those guys. But I was ready. It was time for me when I got my head coaching job at Fresno State. And, you know, I when I was coaching high school, I tried to coach every single possession, every single deal. You know, because you're young, you're 25 years old, and boy, you're out there playing just as much as the guys are playing. I think as I got older, and even into my third year as a head coach at Fresno State, I think I started growing into, you know what it took to be a head coach at this level. You know, as an assistant coach, you make a lot of suggestions, you know, and as a head coach, you make a lot of decisions, you know, and you have to stick behind those decisions that you make, whether it's, you know, practice, games, recruiting, all of those things. You're the one that makes the decisions on those at the end of the day. And so my transition was good. I've been with some good people that I think that have prepared me for it, but you're always going to have a lot of challenges and things that you still have to try to work through and figure out yourself.
Spring of 2018, the UTEP job is available again. Being a native Texan, what did you see here, and why was the move from Fresno State the right one for you at that time?
I was always kind of disappointed in myself a little bit in not taking the job at the time that it was offered to me before. You know, because again, I know the history and the rich tradition that we have in basketball here at UTEP, and it just never kind of left me that I didn't take that opportunity. Again, God puts you where you're supposed to be, and as much as we want to be somewhere, He puts you where you're supposed to be. But I really wanted the job, and I was taking the job when it was offered to me, to be honest, the first time. But Rick Barnes talked me out of it, and my mom kind of talked me out of it a little bit. So, you know, it just kind of never went away, you know, and when that opportunity presented itself again the next time, you know, I really wanted the job and I really wanted to be here. And, you know, you have those chapters in your life that you're like, man, I wish I would have been able to do that. And I was fortunate enough to be able to have it come back around for me this time. And my mom put her blessing on it and said, hey, you got to go do that. And I was really excited about the opportunity.
All right, let's go back to last season. Your second one here at UTEP resulted in more than double the overall win total, nearly three times as many Conference USA victories as the year before. It certainly, and I think you'd agree with this, was a stressful campaign for you, given the challenges with your own health, with the inconsistencies and the minors' quality of play. Now that you've had a little bit of time to reflect back on it, what did you ascertain from the
Well, for one, you know, again, we had come off a really tough campaign the year before, and we knew, we were trying to build it with older players and things of that nature there. We were pretty competitive that first year. It's really trying to compete night in and night out. I really thought that group gave us as much as they could give us that we assembled the first year. You know, obviously, you know, you have expectations. You know, my expectations are very high. I know our expectations with this program is very high, you know, and when you don't meet those or you feel like you didn't meet those, then you're always disappointed, you know. And again, are there areas that I feel like I could have done a better job? Absolutely. You know, but you only learn through failures and you only learn from your disappointments. And I know this, I'll be better moving forward because of it. You know, I think there probably were times this year that I didn't do a great job of really getting this group to really gel together and be connected. You know, we were in so many possession ball games where, you know, we lost games where it was five or less, seven or less points. You know, you win some of those games or even four of those games. Now you're talking 22 wins in a season as opposed to 17 wins. But again, you know, you take a lot of ownership with the way the season went. My expectations were really high. We started the season with the win against national runner-up in Texas Tech. But again, I think I could have done a better job of keeping the connection there a little bit better, because connected teams win possession ball games. You know what I mean? When you're connected and everybody's bought into their roles, and that's what watching The Last Dance, everybody on the team has a role, you know? You know, the Chicago Bulls couldn't win a championship without a power forward. You know what I mean? So, you know, key positions are critical for you to have, and you have to be able to accept and adapt to those roles. And when you do, then you have a winning team and you have a connected team, and you're able to be playing your best basketball at the right time. But But again, I'm excited with about what we have in terms of our core guys back, returning force for next year. And, you know, just like anything, when you're building a program, in my first 2 years at Fresno State, I think we lost almost 9 players. I think my second recruiting class, which were all freshmen, 5 freshmen, we had one guy standing when he was done. Now, the one guy standing was the MVP of the league and the 2,000-point scorer and all-time leading scorer at the school. And he wasn't the most heralded guy coming in. We had a top 50 player coming in that didn't make it past year one. I know myself and my staff, and having continuity with your staff, we're excited about the challenge to continue to take this program in the right direction and where we think we're going to be able to continue to go.
The transfer it continues to impact most all college basketball programs, certainly the minors included. You and your staff have already filled this roster vacancy, so let's talk about that. Tell us about 6'8" Christian Scholand, who's immediately eligible for the minors after transferring from Georgia Tech. He's got 3 years of eligibility left.
Yeah, no, you alluded to the fact of the transfer portal. It's really the new norm in college basketball, to be honest. You know, whether you talk about mid-major, whether you talk about high major, guys are losing guys, and it's just going to kind of be the way that things are going to be from here on out, to be honest with you, and it doesn't matter what coach you talk to and what program you talk to, guys are losing guys. But at the end of the day, when you lose guys, you have to continue to do a great job. We lost a lot of guys at Fresno State. We probably lost, I don't know, my team there, a little over 18, 19 guys we lost while we were there. So you're going to lose guys. The key with losing guys, I think, is replace them with the right guys. You know what I mean? Or guys that you feel like they can continue to try to fit your program. You also have to do a great job monitoring your APR as well as you navigate through that process. You know what I mean? And I thought we always did a really good job of that at Fresno State. I think I got a really good staff that does a really good job of that here as well. But to your point, you have to continue to recruit and continue to bring in guys when you lose guys. We signed a kid, Christian Scholand, who you talked about just a second ago. When I was at Fresno State, we couldn't touch Christian. His last AAU summer, I mean, he played really well, and boy, he shot the ball really well as a guy of size. He was a guy that Utah's, the Georgia Tech's, you name it, they were recruiting him. And we couldn't get a phone call back, you know what I mean? But he's a guy that's a size guy, that's a pretty good athlete who can really shoot the basketball for his size, and he's a great kid. Comes from a great family.
Adam Hess is 5-inch guard, comes to the minors from Salt Lake Community College after spending a redshirt year at Cal Baptist. So he's got 3 years left too. Tell us about Adam.
You know, John, we've been really defensive-minded since we've been here. We feel like, you're going to still want to win games defensively, but we really feel like we need to address, some of the needs of our program in terms of shooting. We didn't shoot the ball well last year as a team. I think we shot 29% during the year as a team from three, and then we shot 28% in conference, So we were, my mindset is I really don't want to sign someone that really can't score the ball or shoot the basketball. We can teach them how to play defense and try to play hard, but it's really hard to teach a guy how to score, in doing that, we've really tried to address guys that we think can shoot the basketball. Adam Hess is a guy that we targeted and we saw. We wanted to get a guy that we knew that could be on the floor and be a factor on the floor in terms of stretching the defense. You leave him open, it's going to be a shot. We look around our league and we look around other leagues. Guys are always able to put a guy on the floor that can really shoot the basketball, and that's what he does, I think, to be honest with you, too, as you're recruiting a team and you're trying to put a team together, I think it's important that my first 2 years we got here, and, no knock about what we did recruiting-wise, I think we did more of selecting talent as opposed to putting a team together. So, we're more focused, and my staff and myself are more focused on putting guys or putting together a team that's guys understand what they do really well and what we need them to do. Adam Hess is a guy that can really shoot the basketball. He started out his career at Cal Baptist, and then he went on and played at Salt Lake, one of the top junior college teams in the country. And, you know, he's a guy that can really shoot the ball. He's a guy of size that can do that. So I'm excited about Adam. Adam's another great kid, really good character as well.
And Christian Agnew, the 6'2 guard, comes to the minors with 2 years left from North Alabama. There had been some talk that they were going to give all transfers immediate eligibility this coming year. I guess that's not going to happen. So I guess Christian's going to have to sit out. But tell us about his game.
Well, again, you know, that's kind of, again, on a case-by-case type situation, you know, stuff. So that's not definite where he's not going to be able to play. You know what I mean? So there's still going to be some opportunities for guys with waiver situations and things of that nature there. So we're not going to rule out that there's no opportunity for guys to not be able to play this year, you know, and stuff. So, you know, when you talk about Christian, you know, he goes by the nickname Saucy. So you guys, you know, you'll get used to saying Saucy a little bit, you know. He reminds me a lot of what I saw in Sule, to be honest with you. I mean, Sule is a guy that scored the ball for us this year, 13 points a game. And we knew Sule could score the ball. You know, we knew he could put pressure on the basket. You know, Agnew does the same kind of deal, man. He's a guy that brings some scoring, attacking the basket, a defensive mindset where he wants to play really hard on the defensive end of the floor as well. He led their team in steals. You know, I know his head coach really well. He was an assistant in the Mountain West at Wyoming and didn't really want to lose him. I mean, he was a kid, you know, that's grown in their program for 2 years and was their leading scorer and just brings some moxie and toughness to the way he plays. You know what I mean? He improved his 3-point shooting his second year, but he's a guy that puts pressure on the basket, man. He can really create and make things happen, and it's going to be a really good player. I like old Saucy. Saucy's going to be a competitor.
We've gotten far enough to think about Bryson Williams, who, of course, is expected to return. You, of course, have seen the entirety of Bryson's collegiate work. Talk about the progress you saw him make last season and what you're expecting from him moving forward.
Bryson's one of those guys again, and Bryson, we came really close to losing Bryson to the NBA, and you know, would he have been ready, and you know, is he ready to make that jump and do that? Bryson's going to be an NBA player. He's an NBA player. You know, other things that he needs to continue to improve and get better with, yeah, there are areas that he'll continue to improve and get better with, but he's such a great kid. He's the hardest working guy in our program. You know, and getting feedback from a lot of NBA guys, they felt like he really needed to continue to show up his perimeter skills and things that he needs to do from the perimeter. You know, we know in college he can go down there and score with the best of them with his back to the basket, but continue to show guys that he can make decisions with the ball and feel comfortable facing the basket. And then also defensively, comfortable where you're switching up on guys. You're able to stay in front of a guy, you know, and guard a smaller guy. As well. So there were some things that he needed to continue to work with. But, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that Bryson Williams could have gone this year and went to a workout and really, you know, boy, you know, elevated himself to a guy that had a chance to get drafted.
Well, and all the credit to Bryson, too. By the time he's done UTEP now, he'll leave with his degree, won't he?
Which, again, was another big thing for him. You know, he promised his mom that he was going to get his degree as well. And that's always, I think, to me, when you're able to get a college degree, it's one of your biggest accomplishments that you'll have in your life outside of getting married and having kids. You know, and so something that no one ever can take away from you. And he's going to be able to leave with his degree from UTEP. So I know he's going to be super excited about being able to do that. But he's also super super excited about trying to do something that he hasn't done in his career, and that's to try to get to the NCAA tournament. He's played in the NIT on an NIT team. He's played on two 20-win teams. He's trying to take us to a 20-win season and a postseason tournament, you know, and hopefully for him, he's too good a player, and I always get on him about it. I say, Bryson, you're too good a player to never play in the NCAA tournament. So just to give him a little bit more motivation to want to play in that main tournament. You know, you play in the NIT, NIT's great. You know, and I'm not downplaying that, but you want to play the NCAA tournament.
Sule Boom, he had some terrific games, and in others, his shot, it it just didn't fall. How can you help him find a consistency, particularly with his shot that eluded him last season?
He ended the season. I thought he ended the season shooting the ball really well and scoring the ball for us and making good decisions with the ball. I mean, when he got to the foul line, he was one of the most deadly guys, not only in our league, but in the country and things. He's only played his second year. You know, he's played 1 year as a freshman, and last year was his second year to play college basketball. So, is there room for him to continue to grow and get better? Absolutely. I mean, he's a double-figure scorer for us last year, which we anticipated that he would be for us and everything, and he was able to live out and do that for us and stuff. So I think he'll continue to get better and better. I love Sule. He really got better defensively as the season went along as well for us. And, you know, there are a lot of guys, Joe, when you talk about guys in the transfer portal that are losing guys that are averaging 18, 20 points a game with double-figure scores, you know, our core group of guys that scored the ball for us last year returning. You know, and Sule is one of those guys, and we're excited about that. He's a great kid and wants to be good and wants our team to be good.
Boy, and you mentioned his ability to get the line. I don't think that ought to be minimized. That is just such a huge strength of his.
Well, between he and Bryson, both of those guys were two of the better free throw shooters in our league, you know. And again, Bryson really grew. I mean, Bryson, you know, his freshman year, sophomore year at Fresno State, was an okay free throw shooter, but boy, he really turned it on and had a great year shooting from the foul line. But Sule's like automatic. But and that comes into play, you know, late in games when you're in possession games and you got to end games at the free throw line. You got to, you know, a lot of times you end games with your guards, you know, that hopefully typically they should be your better free throw shooters. There were times we were doing that this year with Bryson to end the game because we knew he could make free throws. You know, and stuff. So that's a big piece for us. And, you know, hopefully we'll continue to recruit guards that can do that for us, that can make free throws.
You know, you talked about a role. Tytus Verhoeven, you know what you're going to get from him night after night. And that's an all-out effort. What steps do you think Tytus can take to elevate his game?
Again, just being more confident and efficient with his right hand and left hand around the basket. I mean, he does some things instinctively that are really good. He's a really good offensive rebounder, and he's a really really good defender, good ball screen defender, good rebounder. I said this to him a couple weeks ago. He really reminds me a lot of Tristan Thompson. He really does. You know, the one thing Tristan would do a little bit more earlier and about the same kind of juncture was that Tristan wanted to score. You know what I mean? So he figured out a way to get a right hand, left hand around the basket, whether it was a quick up or whether it was a quick drop step, you know. But Tytus is not far off. His activity and his motor is really good. Those guys really remind me of themselves.
FEODG, who averaged a double-double as a freshman, he saw his numbers drop in just about every category last year. What do you think is next for Effie?
You know, Effie enjoyed such a great freshman year. You know, we got a chance to come in and experience a high level of success in college basketball. And I thought he got off to a great start in terms of changing his body and really, you know, bought into that part in terms of really preparing himself for the season. And I think that there were times throughout the season this year that there were opportunities where we really needed him to step up and get some things done for us. I think, you know, again, moving forward, I think so much of it has to do with Effie's his approach and being excited about wanting to get out and really get after that level and stuff. But it's no doubt in my mind that if that's on point, he can be as successful as he wants to be.
Eric Villa, his teammates saw his effectiveness kind of vary from game to game. What must Eric do you think, to pick up his level of play on a consistent basis?
Well, again, you know, we thought he'd shoot the ball a lot better than he did this past season. But Eric, again, is one of those guys who never stopped being a great teammate all year long. You know, whether he was playing, not playing, whether he was playing good, not playing good, he was a great teammate all year long. I think the biggest thing for Eric is to just, you know, be a more confident player, have more belief in himself and not get down on himself in terms of really being hard on himself and not being able to do some of the things that maybe the team needs him to do. But again, a great kid. He's going to get his degree and graduate. He's going to have to be obviously, you know, a more consistent shooter for us as well. But I think, again, he gets back to being a confident guy. You know, and confidence is so fragile a lot of times with young players, you know. But he's going to be going into his fifth year of school. So, you know, he's an older player. We're going to expect him to carry himself like an older player.
Keyonte Kennedy sat out all of last year, practiced with the minors after transferring from Xavier. He also has 3 years left. I think we're all excited to see Keyonte on the game floor. What's he going to bring to the party?
You know, Keyonte's a young player, again, who's still, you know, he got some playing time over at Xavier and things of that nature, but he'll still be getting introduced to Division I basketball in a competitive setting. Now, you talk about practice. I thought he was really good in practice this past year. On the scout team, he gave our guys problems every day. He's a cerebral player. He's a smart IQ guy. He's athletic. He can shoot the ball. Was going to cause some problems this next year in terms of the rotation board. We had a full, you know, all those guys coming back. Keyonte's a good player, and he picks up things really fast. And I think he can be a really good defender as well. You know, but another guy that's very confident and really believes in his abilities and stuff. I love Keyonte. I think he has a chance to be a really good player.
All right, so the Miners currently have 9 on scholarship, so obviously you're not done adding. Must you find a true point guard to direct this group?
Yeah, you know, again, yeah, for sure, no doubt about it. I mean, we played 2 years without a point guard, and every team that I had there at Fresno, with the exception of maybe one of those, didn't have a point guard. You feel the pinch when you don't. You're very limited in what you can do in terms of controlling games and winning games. Especially possession games, you know, and stuff. So, you know, we're involved with what we feel like is a very, very talented point guard, one that probably as talented as any point guard that we've been involved with. And now it's just a matter of trying to see it through if we can get it done. But it definitely would change our trajectory in terms of guard play here at UTEP.
What else in particular are you and your staff looking for?
Well, when you put a team together, I think there's always a need for a guy who's kind of a tweener. When you say tweener, a guy that can play a little 3-4, maybe 4-3, you know what I mean, and things of that nature. So you always like having one of those kind of guys in your program to be able to contribute and give you that versatility. So, you know, you could be looking for a guy like that. You could also be looking to take another guy that you can bring along, maybe in the post or something like that, maybe even another guard, for that matter and stuff. But again, you know, you never want to get to a point. I thought last year's team, again, as you go through it, you know, I've talked to a number of different guys and their philosophies in terms of, you know, you got 13 scholarships. You want 13 guys that all think they're going to play. You can't play 13 guys. It's hard to play 10 guys. You know what I mean? I think really good teams, you play 8 to 9 guys. You know what I mean? So, you know, you don't want to be in a position where you have guys that are unhappy. One, they're developmental players to begin with most of the time because they're young players. Two, you don't want them to be in a position where now they're having to, you know, maybe go out and people around them try to say, well, I'm not starting and I'm not getting an opportunity, so I'm not happy. There's really no need for that as well. So I think you have to really be very selective in terms of who you recruit and kind of gauge where they are and who you can bring along and who's going to understand where they are in terms of being a developmental player as well. So, you know, could we fill all 13? We could. Could we hold one and take a guy that we're going to sit out for the next year? I mean, it was a luxury for us this year to have Keyonte sit in our recruiting class, you know, and not playing last year. That's a big deal. You got a guy that comes from a Power 5 conference that's a really good player sitting out. You know, that's a big deal, too. So I wouldn't be opposed to possibly doing something like that as well. But I think, again, the biggest thing for us next year to take another step forward, you know, in the program here is to have great team chemistry, to have a team that's connected and a team that wants to play together and enjoy being connected to each other on the court.
Obviously, at this point, what can you tell about the Miners' schedule for next year?
You know, John, another very challenging area as well. You know, as much as we talk about roster management and working with your roster, you know, the scheduling piece is just the same. And the uncertainty with the pandemic and And the COVID-19 has also kind of pushed the financial button on a lot of institutions and in our sport in particular, you know, and stuff. So it's been pretty challenging. Coach Mattson's done a really good job of really trying to identify really good games for us. I mean, we're in a unique situation where we have built in really good games with New Mexico State home and home, you know, in the same year. And you're sitting there with, you know, a return game next year at New Mexico. So you're talking about three really good games before you even started anything. You know, our Sun Bowl guys, you know, Barry and those guys, they do a great job. You know, with opponents, we got two really good opponents already right now that were league champions in their league from a year ago that's going to be in our tournament this year. So our Sun Bowl tournament is going to be very competitive. You know, we're really close. You know, now we just got to get the ink to it a little bit with a big game in Houston next year in the Toyota Center where we will play against, A&M will be a big game for us. Buzz does a great job over there, and Buzz and I are really good friends and known each other a long, long time. And will be a very, very competitive game for us. I mean, we're close to getting it done. We're right there, you know, and everything, and it looks like it's going to get done for us, but we just got to connect all the dots and cross the T's on and stuff, which will be another very competitive game for us and stuff. But the schedule's shaping up to be really good. We're not going to play in per se a tournament. We're going to have a couple of home games that we're going to be able to get, and then we've got to go out to Washington State and play at Washington State. So very competitive non-conference schedule. That's going to prepare us for a really good conference slate.
This is probably an unfair question, you know, as we sit here in the middle of May. What do you expect the college basketball season is going to look like next year?
That's a great question. You know, if I had a crystal ball, man, you know, we're just trying to get to a point to where we could potentially have some summer access with our team going into the fall, you know, and stuff. So when that will happen or the timing of that is really just so much uncertainty. And rightfully so, because, you know, we're trying to keep our guys, you know, safe and make sure we take care of those guys and not put them in harm's way. But, man, I really don't know. You know, right now you have to plan for a season. You have to schedule for a season. And that's what we're doing right now. We won't have the pod system next year in conference play. We're going to go back to finishing out a regular season schedule in conference, which I think will be really good for us. And we'll have a really good schedule. We're really close to being done with our schedule, though. We're really close.
As a head coach, it's the unknown, though, isn't it?
No, it really is. You know, a lot of times you don't have the unknown going into knowing you're going to have a season or an opportunity to play X amount of games and not have to worry about it. But it is. It's a different time for us right now and something we're all trying to cope with.
Rodney, I got to tell you, I like the new look with the mustache and the beard and some hair up on top. So thanks for sharing this. And it's always talking about basketball with you. Thanks for checking in with us. All the best on the recruiting trail as it is. And we look forward to seeing you and some UTEP basketball on the other side of this.
No, thank you, John, as well, buddy. And again, I'm growing hair, but I never thought I could grow hair anymore, you know. And so it's always an exciting time for me to be able to do that and stuff. But again, I appreciate you taking time to talk minor basketball with us. I'm excited about where we're going and what we're doing. We're on pace for what we set out to do when I got here. And we're just going to keep working hard at it. We're in on some really good guys to finish out this recruiting class. And we're able to get the guys that we're talking right now, boy, just continue to take us to another level.
Thanks again to you, football coach Rod Perry, and hopefully you enjoyed this installment of the Picks Up Podcast, a UTEP Athletics production. Stay safe, stay well, Picks Up, and go Miners. I'll talk to you again next time on another edition of the Picks Up Podcast.